were studying the thing about if you don't bear, fruit, you're cut off. And there's one more we want to go to. So we started it, I think. John 15. Did we start John 15, or do you have your notes?
I did. I gave it to Joseph.
All right, John 15. This metaphor is, or parable of Christ, it's really a metaphor, is probably the single most important one to understand our position vis-a-vis Christ. I am the...
Pardon? John 14?
John 15, verse 1. I am the true vine, and my Father is the husbandman. Every branch in me that beareth not fruit, he taketh away. And every branch that beareth fruit, he purgeth it, that it may be forth, bring forth more fruit. Now you are clean through the word which I have spoken unto you. Abide in me, and I in you, as the branch cannot bear fruit of or from itself, except it abide in the vine, no more can you, except you abide in me. I am the vine, you are the branches. He that abideth in me, and I in him, the same bringeth forth much fruit. For without me you can do nothing. If a man abide not in me, he is cast forth as a branch, and is withered. And men gather them and cast them into fire, and they are burned. If you abide in me, and my words abide in you, you shall ask what you will, and it shall be done unto you. Herein is my Father glorified, that you bear much fruit. So shall you be my disciples. Now this is the perfect metaphor for the mind of Christ, that we must be in that position where there is no life in the branch except that which comes from the vine. There's no activity in the branch except that which originates from the vine. There's no better explanation of what the mind of Christ is. He is the vine, we are the branches. Abide in him, he in you, with the mind of Christ. Therefore, there is perfect harmony and communication between the Father, the Son, and the bride. Without that, you're just a wild oat. Or you can come back and visit the vine once in a while. But you're just kidding yourself. Everybody understand that?
It's just cut off. It dies. It's dead already.
Now, the vineyard or the vine is an incredible parable of what it takes to make good wine. There has to be drought, there has to be incredible freezing cold, there has to be, I know, maybe not freezing cold, but there has to be all kinds of what we would call suffering for the vine and the branch in order for it to produce good wine or good grapes that are suitable for good wine. You've heard me talk about the wine that was suitable for use in the temple. And they didn't use the wine that they made every year for the wine in the temple for this reason. And even when the wine was the best that they had, the best, grapes were perfectly suited, and they had a whole course of priests who did nothing but take care of the vineyard and make the wine. And so they'd done this hundreds of years. They were as professional as you can get. And so the first thing is, every year the vine was pruned so it bears more fruit. Even after the grapes were picked and they were stomped on and crushed, then they had to go through the seven lees. So it was an incredible thing to be, it was rare for the wine to be suitable for the temple. Obviously, if the branches had a mind of their own, then that nothing could be done except throw them in the fire.
Was the suitability based on taste or something more?
Well, it was the same criteria for the wine of today. It's taste. Bottom line is it ends up as taste, but it's all of the different. I'm not a wine expert. I went to a couple classes once and they just confused me.
Temperature variation causes grapes to either produce more flavonoids, which result in greater flavor, or in sugar, so that it's sweeter. Not freezing, obviously, that'll kill it.
Yeah, I corrected it. 45
degrees in the evenings and hot afternoons and days produces the best grapes.
Anyway, you just stop and think. Are you one of the vines, the branches that is connected without any interference between you and the vine? Or are you a branch that still thinks it's something, has to do stuff? It's the suffering of being pruned. It's the suffering of drought. It's the suffering of all kinds of things.
Yeah, perseverance and not fainting.
But it speaks to me. It speaks incredibly to what the mind of Christ really is. Empty. It can't go visit itself. The minute the branch would go visit itself, then it becomes useless. Consider these things. That's what all the parables are about. All right. Let's go back to Luke 13. Verse 10, and he was teaching in one of the synagogues on the Sabbath. And behold, there was a woman which had a spirit of infirmity 18 years and was bowed together and could in no way lift up herself. And when Jesus saw her, he called her to him and said unto her, Woman, thou art loosed from thine infirmity. And he laid hands on her, And immediately she was made straight and glorified God. And the ruler of the synagogue answered with indignation, because that Jesus had healed on the Sabbath day, and said unto the people, "There are 6 days in which men ought to work, and them therefore come and be healed, and not on the Sabbath." And the Lord answered him and said, "Thou hypocrite, doth not each one of you on the Sabbath loose his own ox or his ass from the stall and lead him away to watering? And ought not this woman, being a daughter of Abraham, whom Satan hath bound, lo, these 18 years, be loosed from this bond on the Sabbath day?" And when he had said these things, all his adversaries were ashamed, and all the people rejoiced for all the glorious things which were done by him. Now, this is the first time that Jesus did what was called work on the Sabbath. And over time, it just piled up, and it's one of the reasons that Sanhedrin voted to crucify him. Because it happened over and over on the Sabbath that he... So we're going to look into that, okay? I guess the first... The first word is he was teaching. And the teaching is didasco. And it's not a dialogue. It never was. It's not a monologue. It is a dialogue. And the fact that even the disciples, except they were in awe of what he was saying, he would interrupt and say, what's going on? And so that's the whole issue of why I pray that each Bible study that we have, whether here or in the Seder groups or big group, would be a dialogue. Because when each one of you must, and by definition, by reality, has a response to things that are said internally. There's amen, or there's no, or there's I don't understand, or oh, that's BS, or whatever. But if you don't say it, if you think it and you don't say it, then you respond as if you had said it. I don't know how to say this, except if you have judgment against somebody and don't say anything, you will respond to that person as if you had said it. You understand what I'm saying? If you have a marriage, and if you're married and have a truce, then you respond as if there was no truce, because a truce is not acceptable. And so there's a distance. You can feel the separation happen. And so the whole idea of what we do on every day, on Seders and on Big Group, is... it should be a dialogue, and I've said this for so many years, but I need to say it periodically.
Let me dialogue you on this a little. Jesus was teaching them stuff, right? Is that where this took place? He was teaching.
The word was didasco, which means to hold a discourse with.
Yeah.
So it's not teaching.
I'm comparing it to Paul saying, "I can teach you nothing," and I'm assuming maybe Christ would say that too, and yet it seems a little different. But
he was just simply revealing the meaning of the law.
But I'm assuming in this part that he was opening up the law to show that it revealed himself. That would be
right.
Teaching, not teaching. Kind of.
Right.
They
it's but
learning.
It's. Or something that really caused great indignation.
Yeah.
Great self-righteousness.
Yeah, because everybody likes to think of Jesus as a great teacher, which, yes.
Yeah, great teacher.
can't come to unless you hate your mother, father, sister, and brother. Yeah, you know in life also. Yeah, that's great teaching.
This ruler of the synagogue, was that the high priest?
No. We'll go through this on a word-by-word basis, but I want to go back, and just so we start off, we're going to go backwards. So I want to go to the law, what it says about. Let's go to first. Go to Exodus 23. This is the reference to to the ass. Anyway, starting verse 1. Thou shalt. This is sort of at the end of the. Remember when it says they read the law? Remember when we talked about that? Remember everybody? They read the law when was it? Pentecost, I think. Anyway, whatever it is, and all stood and they read the law. Well, when they read the law, it wasn't reading the entire five books. When they read the law, it was. But where did we start? Yeah, it was chapter 20, 21, 22, and half of 23. Or maybe really all of 23, but sometimes some of them said half of 23. So those were the chapters when it said they read the law, because that in effect is the essence of the law. In 20, it starts off with the Ten Commandments, and it goes on to all of these different other aspects of the law. So we're going to just read we're just going to read 23, or part of 23. Thou shalt not raise a false report. Put not thine hand with the wicked one, or to be an unrighteous witness. Thou shalt not follow a multitude to do evil, neither shalt thou speak in a cause to decline after many to wrest judgment. Neither shalt thou countenance a poor man in his cause. If thou meet thine enemy's ox or his ass going astray, thou shalt surely bring it back to him again. And if you see the ass of him that hateth thee lying under his burden, and wouldest forbear to help him, thou shalt surely help him. Now I'm just reading what he's referencing in the law. And there. And what if, let's go to Deuteronomy. I'll show this again. Deuteronomy 22. Let's start in verse 1 again. Thou shalt not see thy brother's ox or his sheep go astray and hide thyself from them. Thou shalt. Deuteronomy 22, verse 1. I'm sorry. Thou shalt not see thy brother's ox or his sheep go astray and hide thyself from them. Thou shalt in any cause bring them again unto thy brother. If thy brother be not nigh unto thee, or if thou know him not, then thou shalt bring it unto thine own house, and it shall be with thee until thy brother seek after it, and thou shalt restore it to him again. In like manner shall thou do with his ass, and so shalt thou do with his raiment, and with all lost things of thy brother's, which he hath lost, and thou hast found, shalt thou do likewise, that thou mayest not hide thyself.
Thou shalt not see thy brother's ass or his ox fall down by the way, and hide thyself from them. Thou shalt surely help to lift them up again. Now, the reason he said this is that's the law. That's what the law said. But the oral law, which was really traditions, said that you can't do that on the Sabbath. Now, I'd have to go to the Talmud to show you that, where it says you can't do those things on the Sabbath. So this, then, he is saying, Jesus is saying, and in effect, he said it many times, but he's saying, in effect, you idiots, don't you know the Sabbath is me? Now, and in fact, he said that about all the scriptures, but so they, for hundreds of years now, they've been doing the, they've been having all these minuscule rules. There were 46 things you could do on the that are in the law, and they interpret it that way anyway, that you could be, for which you could be killed for doing it on the Sabbath day. The Talmud. Well, let's read the Ten Commandments real quick.
Number 10.
Go to verse chapter 20 of Exodus. It starts in verse 3. Thou shalt have no other gods before me. Thou shalt not make unto thee any graven image or likeness of anything that is in heaven above or that is in earth beneath, or that is in the water under the earth. Thou shalt not bow down thyself to them, nor serve them. For I, the Lord, thy God, am a jealous God, visiting the iniquity of the fathers upon the children unto the third and fourth generations of them that hate me, and showing mercy unto thousands of them that love me and keep my commandments. Thou shalt not take the name of the Lord thy God in vain, for the Lord will not hold him guiltless that taketh his name in vain. Remember this Sabbath day to keep it holy. 6 days shalt thou labor and do all thy work, but on the seventh day is the Sabbath of the Lord thy God. In it thou shalt not do any work, thou nor thy son nor thy daughter, thy manservant, nor thy maidservant, nor thy cattle, nor thy stranger that is within thy gates. For in 6 days the Lord made heaven and earth, and all except heaven, earth, and the sea, and all that is in them, and rested the seventh day. Wherefore the Lord blessed the Sabbath day and hallowed it. Now, the law is much more than just a bunch of rules. I mean, this is another revelation of Christ. You could work and do all your stuff and your toil and your imaginations and all that until his death and resurrection. Now he is the Sabbath. So all of the things that were death penalties on the Sabbath, in effect, become death penalties for us if we work any time, if we toil. That's why the word for toil, I mean the word for evil, is poneros, which means labor or toil. You understand what I'm saying? Well, then what do? You have to work. You have to continue until you find out and know with every muscle, nerve, and fiber in you that he is the Sabbath. And you shall do no work in the Sabbath. Any work you do, what seems to be work, is not work at all. Here is the patience of the saints. Here are they that keep the commandments of God and the faith of Jesus Christ. And I heard a voice from heaven speaking, Blessed are the dead which die in the Lord. From henceforth, yea, saith the Spirit, they rest from all their labors. And then he works, follow them. Nothing projected, nothing planned. And just so you know where that is, go to Revelation 14. One is taken, the other is left behind. That's why it's so critical that we push everything. We find out, not because somebody said it to you, or even if it's that it's written. It has to become meat in you. But if you know and still do it anyway, then you got to take the lowest seat. You gotta say, Father, I don't know what else to do. Help me. But you never can justify working anymore, ever again. Here it is in verse 12 of chapter 14, Revelation 12. The three things that every believer wants: the patience of the saints. Here is the patience of the saints. Here are they that keep the commandments of God. Here are they that have the faith Jesus Christ, or Jesus. And I heard a voice from heaven saying unto me, write, blessed are the dead which die in the Lord from henceforth, yea, saith the Spirit, that they may rest from their labors, and their works do follow them. And the reason the works follow them is it is not work. But you can't do it until you hear internally. Because you're gonna just keep on using your mind, having the same thing. You can't bring every thought into captivity to the obedience of Christ until you find out all the thoughts are vain. There's nothing there. Why I keep saying over for all these years, push everything till you know the emptiness and futility of everything. Then and then alone can you live by faith. And faith is automatic from that position. Branch is automatic on the vine from that position. Because you know you have been dead and buried. There's no more questions about it. You don't know, well, how does this look, or what am I doing? You just be instead of trying to be. But I can preach that till hell freezes over, until you know the emptiness and vanity of every idea and every plan and every work in your mind and every opinion and every judgment. You'll continue to use your mind. Give it breath. And I'll continue to say, take no thought. You can bet on it. I've done it for 40 years.
Flesh.
That's right. And so you're just playing Christianity.
But that's my point. If you hear it, you can't wait for God to
knock you on the head. You've got to take the lowest seat. You've got to say, Father, I don't know what else to do. This is the way I understand it. If this isn't correct, if it's all right for me to take thought about some things, if it's all right about for me to be careful for some things, then show me. But until you do, I don't know what else to do but continue what I'm doing. But never justify. Is that anybody have any questions about what I meant?
You need to be around the bush less.
That's right where religion enters in. As soon as it gets risky, you feel your salvation at stake or whatever the fear is, that's when religion reaches in and says, well, just do this, do that, do this, do that, and you'll be okay. So there's nothing real there. It's Adam saving his ass.
It's the evil one. Adam's dead. It's the evil one. He's the origin of all your thoughts, all your plans, all your ambitions, all your ideas. What?